Hello, I'm Josh.
And I'm Christy. You know, we all have family picture frames. Frames that reflect the people who bring us the most joy, but also the people who can bring us the most frustration.
Yet, no matter what, the people in those frames have your back, and you have theirs. Regardless of who's in your frame, you're in it together. They are your legacy.
Welcome to the In This Together podcast, where we go behind the scenes to share stories from our own crooked picture frame.
And interview guests to discover how their stories can give us insight on becoming families who live, love, and lead well.
Because you're not alone. We're all in this together. Today's podcast is brought to you by 22-6 Parenting, an online community designed to help you disciple your kids to live, love, and lead well. Check it out at 22-6parenting.com.
Welcome back to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast. We are super excited today to have two amazing people on the podcast talking about...
Who just happened to be married. To one another, I mean.
Yeah. Louie and Shelley Giglio, thank you so much for being on the podcast, you guys.
What an honor.
Thanks for having us on.
We really appreciate it. And it's fun just to get to talk to you guys and especially together. So thanks for the privilege of that.
I know. It's like a fun little double date, although we can't see you.
This is almost like dating right here.
Well, we'd love for you guys just to start, and we kind of think it's fun. We do this sometimes where you just introduce one another. So, because you guys can give far more background and better info than we ever could to introduce you.
Man, how long does the podcast last?
However long you need, Louie.
Wow, Shelley, you know, to introduce her properly, she's the most amazing person alive.
Whoa.
She's the smartest person I know. Mm-hmm. She has incredible capacity to do a multitude of different kinds of things all at the same time, but do them all really well. She has a business degree from Baylor University, where she's currently a regent, meaning she runs the place along with a bunch of other people. But she wouldn't say that, but it's a big deal to be the regent of a university. So Shelley is on with us today. She also runs Six Steps Records, which is a label that came out of Passion Conferences 17 years ago with the likes of Tomlin and Redman and Crowder and Passion. And she has helped craft the careers of people who have Grammy Awards and platinum albums, and she's stewarded that so well. She started The Grove for the Women of the City of Atlanta, which is a monthly gathering for ladies, which is incredible and the most amazing thing I've ever been to. We have one child. It's a dog named London. She's a golden doodle. And she's freaked out right now because it's a thunderstorm in Atlanta again. But that's just a few of the things, Shelley, does most of all. She's just incredible, has great insight, wisdom, discernment, and is real funny. So this is going to be a really fun podcast.
Oh man, no pressure. That was very nice.
Wasn't that the best introduction? Like, no one could do it like Louie could do that. That's amazing.
Glowing. I will never That's very kind. He's looking for points for sure.
Yeah.
What part of that wasn't true?
Well, I don't know.
I could never live up to what? To being a regent? You are a regent. To being the head of Six Steps? You already are that. You do run.
To being amazing. Maybe one of the most amazing humans, that part. That was definitely.
That was great.
By way of introduction, I'd like to introduce you to Louie, who is just kind of a fledgling new speaker that we're trying to give a lot of opportunity to. He has had very limited exposure to people. And so we're just trying to put him in front of audiences where people can see that he actually can communicate well. And we've been trying that for a few years now, and it seems like we're making progress. And he's written a couple of small books. Probably you've never heard of them, although millions of people are accessing and reading them, and they're totally rearranging and changing their lives. And so what an honor it is to be married to this guy. I get asked pretty much on a daily basis, do you not feel blessed getting to be married to Louie? And the answer to that is, obviously, I am incredibly blessed to be married to Louie. But it's not because he's a great communicator or a leader of amazing movement. It's not because he's impacted millions of people with the gospel, although that is one of the most compelling and things that make me love him the most is his priority and love for Jesus and the gospel. But primarily, he is the most generous person. He is always reaching for other people in his life and elevating them to places that they don't even know that they're capable of being. And he has the privilege, I think, of doing that all in the name of God and bringing honor to God. And so it's pretty awesome to get to be married to Louis.
Wow.
Hey, guys, if I could tell a really quick story. I know we've got a podcast to do a few years ago. A decade ago, I was speaking at a worship conference in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm just saying this on the podcast so that people listening, please never do this. never look at the wife of a pastor leader type guy and say anything like this to her. So I'm speaking at this thing. There's a young artist who performed, and Shelly and I are really big into supporting artists. And so I said, babe, before we leave, conference is ending, but let's run out and get her CD in the foyer of the church before we leave. And she's like, no, let's don't do that. The conference is over. You'll never get out of here. We'll be the last people to leave. And I say, no, we'll dart into the resource area. We'll grab the CD and we'll be out. So all that works out fine until a lady stops me and wants to talk for a second. And then there are two or three people around. And this is back in the day. And there was a cassette tape series of mine for sale. And a lady has it in her hand and she's inching her way up and she wants me, I guess, to sign it. And then Shelly is standing next to me and she's melting down. She's like, this is exactly what I told you was going to happen. We're going to be here all night. I'm going to be waiting on you one more time. And she's amazing at that. But as we're, you know, the pressure's building a little bit. And then this lady inches in, elbows her way past Shelly and reaches out with the cassette tapes and says, would you mind signing these for me? And I kind of looked like, that's my wife you just pushed out of the way. And she goes, she looks at Shelly. The lady looks at Shelly. This is the thing. Don't ever say this. And she goes, are you the wife? And I'm like, oh my goodness. I'm like, Lord, spare us all in this moment. And Shelly is just kind of looking at her. And I get in between them at this point. Say, yeah, this is my wife, Shelly. She's amazing. And she looks at Shelly. She goes, don't you feel blessed?
Yes, I do. On those days, I do feel blessed.
So can I just say to that lady, if you're listening today, I feel blessed being married to Shelly, and it's a real gift. Thank you guys for having us on.
I love that story. And because we've literally had these conversations with other couples and who are in ministry, and friends of ours, you know, she was talking about this very thing where she felt like a pole, like it was like she wasn't even acknowledged. And she would stand at her husband's side, who's, you know, a leader in ministry, and that people would flock to him and stand in line and wait to talk to him. And she would literally stand there unacknowledged. And we talked about, she said, I felt like a pole, like I was just, you know, a structure in the building, that I was that.
Standing in the way.
Yeah, standing in the way, basically, yeah. Of people getting to my husband. And her husband would turn to her, you know, turn to whomever it was in front of him and say, and did I introduce my wife right here? Like, yeah. The most important person in my life. If you really want to talk to me, you might want to acknowledge the person I love most, who just happens to be standing here. And
you know what I say about that, though, honestly, Christy, is that you know, those moments are when your character is formed the most. Mm. And you realize that you're a servant of God and people in a way that might be visible and it might not be visible. Mm-hmm. And you're serving the people by praying and supporting your husband, by praying for them in ways. You know, I've stood and listened to Louis talk to hundreds and thousands of people over the years. We've been married almost 31 years. And so I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of people, and most of who I am was formed standing by the side, watching people and observing them, praying for them, asking God to do whatever they're begging God to do in their life. And far more of me is formed in those moments than it was in actually being acknowledged or talking to the people. So sometimes God has a way of taking a very dark room, mm-hmm. space where you're really not appreciated, acknowledged, and turning that into a real gift to mankind.
And that's amazing and profound, but I still say to people out there, acknowledge that there's another human being in the equation.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't be so, you know, people hand Shelly, because we live in this crazy celebrity culture, which is jacked up in and of itself.
Yes.
And, you know, we want to get our photograph made with people, and I understand that. I try not to fight against it anymore, although I'd rather just shake someone's hand and have a human interaction than a photo. And the times people will walk up and, can we get a photo? And they'll hand Shelly their phone. Can you take a picture of us? And I'm like, that's my wife right there. And, you know, if we're going to take a photo, let's all get in it together. But I don't know that people don't typically have motives like that. They're just, they're encouraged in the moment, and sometimes they're nervous, and you just take all that to heart. But I'm just encouraging people out there, notice people's spouses, notice people, period. That might be the best way of saying it.
Yeah. We just did an episode yesterday, Christy and I did, on the podcast, just the two of us, just talking about raising kids to be human. And part of that came out of a conversation we had with Gabe and Rebecca Lyons, actually, as it related to screens and screen time with our kids these days and that kind of thing. And I think exactly what you're talking about is acknowledging people and acknowledging their pain, acknowledging what they're going through. Shelley, you said it well, too, just standing alongside, because I think it's a great balance between exactly what you guys just said. I mean, praying for the individual who wants to come up and is there, and praying for all the people, tens of thousands of people that Louis is speaking to. With that, I want to kind of dovetail into this, because your marriage is, I mean, you guys are leaders. You guys are well known, across the world. And I want to tie in, because if you're listening today, Louis just wrote a book called Goliath Must Fall, Winning the Battle Against Your Giants. And this is such a great book as it relates to, well, any of us in life and navigating our relationship with Jesus, but especially also in the context of marriage and family, because we all have Goliaths within our family, and it's those Goliaths that can often come between us. As you two navigate, because our podcast is all about living, loving, and leading well, and as leaders, your marriage is marriage is under a microscope. How have you guys, first of all, before I ask that question, let me go to Louis. I want you to just speak to Goliath Must Fall, and the whole, just the twist here of the story, as it relates to David and Goliath and this book. And then I'm going to ask another question as it relates to that, but because I think our audience needs to hear first your heart behind the book and the twist in the story that you have with it. So if you don't mind doing that.
Yeah, the book came from a series we did 3 summers ago here at Passion City Church in Atlanta. And the series really resonated. You know, every pastor, leader, speaker thinks all their series resonate with the people, but, you know, they don't all strike the same chord. This one struck a big nerve with people in our house. And I think it's because we all know David and Goliath, the most well-known underdog story of all time, but forget about, you know, thousands of years ago, a shepherd boy and a 9.5-foot-tall Philistine. We've all got giants standing in our valley right now. Everybody listening to this podcast and their family's got some giant standing in their story, whether it's addiction or anger or rejection or bitterness or fear, worry, anxiety, that the giants are all there. And the book's called Goliath Must Fall for a reason. And that reason is that we talk about in the book that our freedom and God's glory are interwoven. So normally our story only is one-sided as followers of Jesus, and it is, what can God do for me? But our lives weren't created simply so that God could do something for us. Our lives were created to do something for God. And so there's two sides of this story. It is, what can God do for me? Which, can he free me from addiction? Can he free me from anger? But the second part of the story is that, what will that do for God? And what it will do for God is it'll give God glory as being bigger than the giants in my life. And for us to cruise around saying we're Jesus followers, and yet the world sees that we can't get over the hurdle of these things that we face in life, it really doesn't make us look weak. It makes God look weak. And so that's why we say Goliath must fall, for our freedom's sake and for God's glory. Mm-hmm. And the twist in the book, the spoiler alert, I guess, for people, is that, you know, a lot of us grew up in church. We heard the story many, many times. And at the end of every message, it was like, if little shepherd boy David can take down Goliath, you can take down all the giants in your life. But the truth of the matter is, we can't. No amount of zeal, encouragement, dedication, commitment, rededication in our lives is sufficient enough to take on these giants. the beauty is that we discovered in the series and in the book, we open this up a little bit, that we're not David in the story of David and Goliath. Jesus is David in the story of David and Goliath. He's the hero of the story, not us. And he's already done everything necessary to take all the giants down. We just need to walk in what Jesus has already done for us.
I love that. And I want to now ask that question that I was leading into prior, because you talk in the book a little bit about your Goliath, your personal Goliath. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that. And then just Shelley, even just how you guys, because your marriage would be under a microscope with the leadership, you know, that you guys have, how you guys support one another with your own Goliaths. And what does that look like practically in the everyday as you are as one flesh?
Yeah, I talk about it a lot in the book. In 2008, I had a big collapse. I think in the old days, they call it a nervous breakdown. You don't really hear much about that anymore because it's a pejorative term and we don't use those anymore. So people don't have nervous breakdowns anymore. They have panic disorders and anxiety attacks. But I had a collapse. I mean, a complete and utter mental collapse. And I didn't really see it coming, but you kind of look back and it was a pretty crazy year for us in 2008. I could go into a lot of the reasons why, but suffice to say there were probably six or seven things going on in our lives that year that would put anybody under any one of them. And the last of which was Shelley having a herniated disc in her back while we were finishing a global tour in Sydney, Australia, and not even being able to get on a plane to come home. And all through that, it was a crazy year, but sort of on the backside of it, October, once we did get home eventually, I went into a hole, and that's the only way I really know how to describe it, of depression, anxiety. I was having a lot of physical symptoms that were tied into it, but I didn't leave the house for a couple of months. I didn't go to dinner with friends. I didn't go to meetings at the office, and I was out of commission. It took me a long time. I liken it to breaking a string on a tennis racket, and when that happens, you can't just try to hit the ball harder. You can't put duct tape on it. You have to take all those strings out of that racket and put a whole new set of strings in the racket. And when you do that mentally and emotionally, it takes some time. So it really took me about 6 months to kind of almost feel normal. And then it took a few years to really migrate out of that. And it's still not like 1,000% gone. So anxiety is something that I struggle with. I get it from my family. Both my parents, I think worry is in our genes. And but that season in and of itself, I talk about it a lot because I'm a pastor and people need to know that pastors struggle just like everybody else does. But B, I talk about it because I know God can bring you through whatever valley you're in. So Goliath Must Fall isn't a little self-help book from up high in the pious pulpit. It's really a real life story that I know for a fact that God's greater than whatever we're facing in life. But Shelley can speak to it, but, you know, bless her heart. You know, it's pretty hard to walk through a situation that somebody can't even fully explain what they're going through. And you don't feel at all like you can help them. Yeah. But man, I could have never made that, made it through that time without Shelley's perseverance and patience and just being an anchor, really, for us, for our family during that time.
I can't imagine, like, I mean, especially the helplessness, like, that you would feel, Shelley. Can you talk about that? Like, how that was from your perspective as a supporter?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, I think many of the Goliaths that we all deal with in our families are sort of predictable. Mm-hmm. Like, you know it's coming, you know that there's a challenge that you're dealing with as sort of an ongoing thing in life. So we certainly have some of that. But I think there's also times that the Goliath seems to be more on the prowl maybe than in normal day-to-day issues. And this was what Louis described in 2008 for us. It was, I knew Louis had, you know, anxiety in his life. So none of that was surprising to me. But I think the debilitating nature of what we faced in that season was a little surprising to me because we were planning a church. We were at the beginning stages of that. It felt like there was so much for us to be giving away at that point, but instead Louis had to kind of retreat. and to regroup so that he could be in a better place to do some of that. And I think what I felt was that God had probably poured a lot of what he'd given me in my life to prepare me for that moment so that I wouldn't be overwhelmed by the idea that things were disabled, but I would be hopeful that things would be reestablished in time. And I had all of that because of the 25 years leading up to that. I didn't have what I needed in that moment really because of the moment. I had what I needed in the moment because of my history. Mm. And really what's true in our life is that God builds on our faith month by month, day by day in our lives. And it's, I call it like shellacking. It's like you're putting another layer of God's faithfulness over your life. Mm. And over time that builds up to be a strong force so that when you do spill a drink on it, it doesn't seep down into the crevices. There's enough of protection on it with God's faithfulness and in your faith that's been built up over time that you can sustain sort of whatever comes. And so for me, you know, it took time. It took years to build to the point where I think God knew, hey, there's sort of a collapse coming, but you're the right person to stand here because of my faithfulness to you all the years leading up. And as you stand here, what will be proclaimed about me is that I'm faithful, that I've been good, and that I will protect and help you through this season too. And so I never really floundered on God's consistency to me. I did have to stand firm in some ways that I never had had to stand in before, but I found God to be truly faithful in those moments. So I think everything, sometimes we disassociate what we're going through now for the moments that we're going to need them. And I think the more that we can see it as preparation for what's coming in life, the better prepared we are to know that God is with us in those moments too, that he's making our life formidable so that we can stand there and be trustworthy with the glory in his name, even in that collapse. And that's what I found to be true of God.
Oh, like seriously, that shellacking, just that analogy or that like visual picture for me, I just think that is such a beautiful, I don't know, encouragement. I mean, we're sitting here like leaning back and like nodding at each other like, oh my goodness. I mean, your story is very similar, I think, to a lot of the things. Shelley, literally, I have a herniated disc that I did. I played volleyball in university and I herniated it. I'm sorry for you.
It's a whole thing in life.
It's been one of our biggest issues because, I mean, and I'm a young mom and we have little kids, but I couldn't even hold our babies. I would go the last, you know, time, I mean, I couldn't walk for 3 weeks. I couldn't, you know, I get it so much. And
yeah.
And it's funny how like, you know, it's a back, it's a physical struggle, right? I mean,
right.
And I think we're just getting to that place. For Josh, Louis, it's a very similar thing. He deals with fear and that the anxiety of, you know, just desiring stability and certainty. And obviously we don't have that in this life. but between us too, I mean, even just this week, we've been having these conversations about allowing ourselves to grieve what we've lost and the things that we've lost, but also just to identify them. And that, you know, for me, this silly back thing that's been an issue for me for, gosh, almost 15 years now. And I just, you know, you get to the place of helplessness. Like, is this ever going to end?
Yeah.
But, you know, what that has been teaching us, I think, in those moments. And I kind of want to circle back. I'm kind of going all over the place, but I kind of want to circle back to Shelley, to just that whole conversation we had in the very beginning. Cause I don't want to let that, you made a couple comments and I just want to, I'd love for you to elaborate more when you were saying about what an honor it was to stand beside Louis in those moments when you felt, you know, you're not really seen, you're not acknowledged. But the honor it was, for you to pray for those people, but also how your character, like those were the character shaping things, moments for you. So many of the young families that listen to this podcast, especially, and we walk through, you know, just this life, family life with, I think they feel just like that. They feel hidden and they feel unseen, and that they're what they do in the day in and day out of, you know, disciplining and caring and feeding and, you know, battling through cubicles and, you know, just the life.
Monday.
Sure. Yes. That they just feel unseen and unnoticed. How did you navigate that? And how did you navigate that, I think, with such humility and looking for ways to grow in it as opposed to focusing on the negative of it?
Well, you know, I think like anything, there are challenges when it comes to maybe one person in the equation being more known or more visible than another one. And my main thing was two things. One, my Goliath was not Louis. Hmm. So what I was fighting in life wasn't him. And I think sometimes when things get really big and out of hand in our lives, we start looking at the other person as though they're the enemy.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. I'm fighting something and I'm having to really stand firm, but I'm standing firm like against you. Mm-hmm. And it's not, that's not true. You know, honestly, God teams us together in those moments so that we have a partner in life to fight through life with. And if we're fighting and spending all of our energy fighting the person, then we've lost all of our ability to fight with the person toward what we're going for. Mm-hmm. And so I would remind myself daily of, you know, the Bible says our struggle is not with flesh and blood. So I'm not struggling against people. I'm struggling against the fact that there's evil in the world, that it's broken, that there are things that are not working the way they're supposed to. That's where the fight is. And so better that I team with my husband and fight those things with him than be fighting against him the whole time I'm fighting those things. And so I think you have to keep renewing your mind to that. What is the truth? How does the truth affect how I'm fighting today or how I'm standing today? So that was one of the things. And then the second thing is that I never signed up in life to be the wife of a successful speaker or a pastor of a church. You know, none of the things that we've done in life, did we have any way of knowing we would do them? So we didn't set out to be like, oh, we're the head of Passion. And I married the head of Passion. At the time I married Louis, nobody had ever heard of Louis. It wasn't like we were popular people. We were just people who were trying to be obedient to God. Mm-hmm. And so when we get in situations where I think the stuff gets all muddy together and it becomes people know us and people are under a microscope and they're looking at us and our marriage and all those things, I have to always go back to, listen, I have a call in my life to be married to a guy named Louis. And my commitment in life is to be a support to him. And that's what I've agreed to do. And that's what, by God's grace, I'm going to do. And that's my primary commitment in life. How that commitment leads me to do all the other things, successful or not successful, that God leads me in, that's fine. But all that's bonus. My commitment is to Louis and to being his support and his wife. And I think, you know, I've never felt less than in that equation. I've always felt partnered with in that equation from Louis. He doesn't ever say, oh, you're the wife and you stand over here or do this or that. I've always felt like we're a team together, but I've always understood that my primary commitment was to him. And therefore, it did never get scrambled as we were going through life with, now we have all these other things, that's my primary commitment instead. And I think that renewal of our mind to that will help us team together and fight together toward the goal that we're trying to reach, which is heaven and Jesus saying to us, well done, good and faithful servant.
Love it. I love that. And I love your singular focus on Jesus throughout the book, throughout your lives, throughout your who you guys are. It's just Jesus, Jesus, Jesus.
And I hope so.
Well, from an outsider's perspective looking in, just so you know, we see that. And I want to turn it back to you, Louis. Just in the book, you talk about, speaking of it being the two of you, you talk about an unwanted third guest at a, I don't know if it was an anniversary dinner you guys were having or you were out at a dinner and an unwanted third guest. But I'm prefacing this so you can just tell that story, but then also give us some practical, because I love the idea of the presence at the table and just some practical takeaways as people are listening with their Goliaths and with what they're wrestling with. Because as we've talked about, these Goliaths are often ongoing and we're battling them with Jesus. Jesus is battling them. But I just want to make sure that we just talk about idea of the presence and then just some practical takeaways for us as we battle those Goliaths.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You know, I tell this story, sometimes people get a little bit sideways and feel like we are too big for our own britches. And that wasn't the intent in the story at all. We were having a birthday dinner out of town, and a guy came from another table in the restaurant, and I could kind of tell he wanted to say hello, and he eventually stopped by and he said hi. He'd been at an event that we'd been at, that we'd spoken at, and very kind conversation, humbling. That's always humbling to know you're in somebody else's story. And it was great. And he kind of moved on and left the restaurant. They were through eating, and about 5 minutes later, I saw him over Shelly's shoulder coming back toward the table. And I thought, okay, maybe he left his glasses or keys or whatever. Well, he comes up and just pulls up a chair and elbows up on the table. I mean, like, I'm here for a while. Says, I was gonna leave, but then I thought, man, what a God encounter, that I was thinking about you guys the other day. I even told my friend, I wish I could tell Louie. And here you're sitting, it must be of the Lord, you know, that we're here to have this meal together. And he just kind of like,
don't blame the Lord is what I
it's like, do you mind if I join you? And so I just underscore again, well, we're celebrating Shelly's birthday together. It's a special occasion. And I ultimately kind of had to tell the guy, you're going to have to leave our table.
Yeah.
And I just used that. And that's nothing bad about the guy. Sweet kid, love his heart. And if you hear the podcast right now, love you. But it was more about talking about how quickly the enemy can pull up a chair at our table.
Mm. Yeah.
And the scripture, you know, this book really, it rests the last part of it on Psalm 23. It's the best known passage of scripture in all the world, the 23rd Psalm. And it says in there that God prepares a table for us in the presence of our enemies. And not he prepares a table in his presence. That's the table we all want. I want to get out of my enemies and out of the fire, and I want a private dining room with God. But that's not what Jesus does. He prepares a table for us right in the presence of our enemies, right in the fire, in the struggle, in the difficulty. He prepares what we need and provides what we need. The problem is that the enemy can pull that third chair up really fast. And sit at the table that God has prepared for us. And so we did a message, and in the book, there's a chapter. It basically says, don't give the devil or don't give the enemy a seat at your table. And if I can just tell a personal story, Shelly and I went through a really hard time a couple of years ago, not personally, but just we were going through the fire and we were going through some really difficult things. And I texted a friend of mine who I knew, quote unquote, had my back. We all know what that feels like, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going through struggles, but this guy's got my back and I needed a vent. And so I texted a friend and I said, hey, you won't believe what happened. You won't believe this. Isn't that crazy? And really all I wanted back was, I love you. I am with you. I am for you. We are in this together. I got a reply back and it said, don't give the enemy a seat at your table. Mm. Wow. That was the whole text. And wow. You know how funny that was? I texted a friend who's about 6 foot tall and weighs about 170 pounds when I could have just reached out to God who created the whole world. And he said in one phrase, basically what I needed to hear is, you're letting the enemy sit down at your table and talk to you and put fear in your heart and put all these crazy ideas in your mind and making you want to fight against people. And you need to tell the enemy he can't sit at your table. And so we're trying to live that out. Jesus prepares a table for all of us in the middle of whatever we're going through to show us and to show our enemies that he is more than enough for us. And the enemy is trying to get at that table every day. And if he's at it, you know it, because he's telling you that's better at the other table. He's telling you, hey, you're not going to make it through this. That's how you know the enemy's at your table. If you're hearing that, that's not coming from your shepherd. That's coming from the enemy. He's telling you that you're never going to get over it. And he's telling you that the whole world is against you. So get your gloves on and get in a defensive posture and swing at anybody that gets close to you. Those are all coming from the enemy. And we've got the power and capacity to tell him, you're not welcome at this table. You can prowl around, because the scripture says he does prowl around like a roaring lion. but you can't sit down. This is a table that Jesus has prepared for me, and you're not welcome at it.
We're like sitting here staring at each other, like kicking each other under the table. So thank you for saying that. Maybe if it was just for us.
Absolutely. No, and that, when I read that, it resonated with me so much because it's such a, I have a text that I have from a dear mentor very similarly to yours, where it's just this one liner to go, oh yeah, I need to turn to Jesus. And, but that one, the visual of that, of not inviting the enemy at your table, it resonated with me so much. That's why I wanted you to tell it, because I think in family life, we tend to allow the enemy in a, even to get between us. And just as you were talking about the solidarity and unity of your marriage, oftentimes we become enemies with each other and the enemy gets into that seat in the table.
Did you know that 94% of people who come to know Jesus do so before the age of 18?
That's a great statistic, but what does it mean for me as a parent? How do I teach my kids what loving God means or even looks like?
Welcome to 22-6 Parenting, a community of parents walking alongside each other to raise kids who love God and love others.
Created through the lens of child development research and grounded in Scripture, 22-6 puts the tools and ideas in your hands to be intentional without adding anything extra to your day.
22-6 has three main features. First is community. It is a shame-free community of parents encouraging one another in our most important role, that of mom and dad. Each month, we go live for a Facebook Q&A with the community.
Secondly is content. 22-6 provides the tools you need to talk about God to your kids. Built on the four key times of the day Moses encouraged to use in Deuteronomy chapter 6, each month's content includes morning prayers, dinner time stories, drive time games, and bedtime questions.
And then there's the coaching. Each month you'll receive a coaching video on that month's mile marker or the topic with practical applications for how to foster character development and spiritual formation in your kids.
Learn more today at 226parenting.com. That is 226parenting.com. As we close,
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. Christy's
I'm like, I want
here.
Something. Hold on. I'll ask this you can ask whatever you want to ask. But what's the one of the, because we're, we talk about marriage, we talk about family, parenting, all that stuff. But for you two, we're talking about marriage. What is one of the best things that you've done for your marriage?
Marry the right person.
It does help.
Amen.
I would say, marriage to me mostly is about preferring somebody over yourself. Hmm. And to the degree that you do that is probably the degree of the successful nature of your marriage. Hmm. And you as an individual in a marriage can't determine what the other person does to prefer you, but you can choose to prefer them. Hmm. And I think usually it sets a pretty good tone for the other person to want to be reciprocal. Mm-hmm. And I feel like many times in marriage, when it becomes a struggle against each other, the last thing that's on our mind and heart is preference of the other person. Yeah. In fact, the other person is the reason in our minds we're in this predicament to start with, right?
Yes.
And so,
yes.
I wouldn't be in this if it weren't for you.
Yep.
So I think that's the point at which preferring someone above yourself is really probably the most helpful. Mm. Is to say, I might feel that we are in this predicament because of you, but I'm still teamed with you no matter what. So we're in this predicament together. And at this point, I can choose to hunker down and kind of protect myself and put a guard up around me and make sure that I end up okay. Or I can actually say, what would be best for you in this place? And as we prefer the other person, I think God reunites, reconnects, and reties us to being a team together to fight through whatever the battle is. So I would just encourage you to, and even listening to myself, have me prefer Louis above myself. And in that, as Jesus is our first preference, obviously, but within marriage, in that, I think God will bring success to the long term of the marriage.
Yeah, and I would add one thing to that. It sounds not practical, and hyper spiritual, but Shelly and I are both trying to avoid being hyper spiritual. It just is the reality. And it sounds obvious, and I think a lot of people could roll their eyes at this, but what keeps Shelly and I together is our common vision. And that vision, you mentioned it just a few minutes ago, Josh, but it's Jesus. We didn't get that over time. We started dating with Jesus at the center of our relationship. We were so in love with him when we met each other that the only way our relationship would work is if it was completely based around Jesus. And we're still here 31 years later, and we still love Jesus, and we still want our two lives joined together into one. Our 10 seconds that we get on planet Earth, we want to be used up for Jesus. And I meet couples every day who love God, go to church, are in Bible studies, blah, 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 have a little small group, this and that. But their vision for their marriage and family isn't that Jesus be known on this earth. And their vision is their kids. But man, what happens when something happens to your child then? You know, hardly any couple survive the death of a child. And unfortunately, I think it's because oftentimes that child was the vision of the marriage. And you got to have something durable and enduring to lock your gaze on. And it can't even be the marriage. The marriage can't be the vision of your marriage. Because then when your marriage gets under pressure, you struggle. You got to have a bigger vision. And I just challenge people to talk about what it means to live lives together, not as ministry leaders like we get to be, but just as people. How can we leverage our time on earth for the name and the fame of Jesus? And if that's a common heartbeat in both the man and the wife, then I think that marriage is going to succeed. And I've got testimony of people who've done and survived all manner of hardship and difficulty. One of my mentors lived on a separate continent from his wife the first 2 years that they were married. And they had one of the best marriages, and they had the best kids of anybody you've ever met. Wow. And boy, you write about them today and somebody would call the legal services on them, you know, because it's just like, no, you can't do that. But that was what God called them to do. And it was for the sake of Jesus and the sake of people around the world who had heard the gospel. And that's what they did. And somehow their marriage survived that. And it actually ended up thriving in it. And I think that setting that priority is the key to having a marriage that endures over a long, long period of time. There's a lot of other factors. Obviously, there are people that don't love Jesus that stay married for a long time. But I know for Shelly and me, that's been a real key to our success.
I really have nothing to add to that.
I just love how freeing that is, though. Because it takes all the pressure off the people in your life to perform or to behave a certain way, because it's not about them. You get to do it with them, but it's not about them.
One of the things, my dad died in November, went to be with Jesus in November, and I've just been in this massive personal study of heaven ever since. So I've been, you know, devouring Randy Alcorn's book on heaven, and I've just been really studying heaven, and just it's been so freeing for me in so many levels, because I feel like we don't, in the Christian, quote-unquote Christian world, we don't do heaven justice in the way that we should. And when we just the place that Jesus is preparing for us, and to focus on Jesus and to focus on being with him one day, and that every single thing that we do here is for him, is just, I can't add anything more to what you said. I mean, it's Jesus. And so, thank you guys so much for taking the time to be with us. And, if you're listening, make sure you can find it in the show notes, but make sure you go and check out Goliath Must Fall, Winning the Battle Against Your Giants. Guys, thank you so much for being with us today.
For more information and resources, or to connect with us, go to drjoshandchristy.com and come find us on Facebook or Instagram at Dr. Josh and Christy.
And be sure to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the In This Together podcast. We'd love if you wrote a review. The more positive reviews we get, the more people learn about it. Tell a friend, and be sure to send us ideas, thoughts, or questions you'd love for us to cover on the podcast.
It's an honor being in this together.
We'll see you next week.